Hello and welcome to still another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine show. I am Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on Memorial Day Monday, also known as Decoration Day, also known as Commemorative Day. Today we just think of it as Memorial Day, and we honor the dead of all wars. In fact, it is often expanded beyond that. All the people who have preceded us, be their relatives, loved ones, everyone, all can be remembered on this day. And I hope you will do the same with the loved ones in your life as well. Welcome to the program as you listen right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Yes, people brave the day to come to the show, even though it's Memorial Day. I always extra special thank the guests that come on a holiday because it's a holiday. They would probably rather be out picnicking, having fun, especially these two gentlemen. The Barn Players are with us today. They're talking about their new musical, Torch Song Trilogy, which opens on this Thursday, May 31st, and it runs through June 10th at the Arts Asylum. That is the new home of the Barn Players. With us to tell us all about Torch Song Trilogy, the director and the lead in the show. Chris McCoy is with us once again. He is the director. He is pay attention now, folks. An assistant professor of theater at William Jewell College. A very learned man.
That's right. Thank you.
Where he also serves as the stage director. He has worked all over the country in theater and in opera. He's worked in Seattle, Atlanta, Denver, St. Louis, San Diego, and probably many other places.
I didn't let him
get all through the list. I said, well, let's just go this far. And he is directed for many theaters here in the Kansas City area. Also was a performer very early in his career, and that probably got him used to directing people.
That's right.
Are you a mental director? Are you a yelling director? We have both here.
Yeah. I don't think I'm a yelling director. Okay. Phil's agreeing with me on that one. Yeah.
No, I would definitely say you're mental.
Not always a compliment. Yes.
Well,
I would say a conceptual director, perhaps. Mm. Yeah. I like to see big picture. And I usually know where I'm going, and sometimes it's a winding path to get there.
Oh, it reminds me of that Mel Brooks routine I mentioned to you earlier.
Oh, yes.
In the skit, he's going up and down this ladder. So he gets to the top of the ladder. Stop, that's not right. And then comes down the ladder, berates the actors, goes back up the ladder. And he's constantly going up and down the ladder through the whole rehearsal. Then at the end of the rehearsal, they're expecting, you know, very divisive notes. He said, oh, you're all just excellent. Thank you very much. Keep up the good. But a director's work is never done, I suppose.
Oh, sure.
Do you give notes even after opening night?
It depends. I definitely scale back on the note giving. So normally it's something, if there's just something glaring, then I will. But I don't do like a traditional note session after the show opens.
Sure.
That's not fair to the actors. You know, by then I really believe it's theirs, they need to bring it to life every night. And so my work is done at that point.
Sure. Well, let's speak to one of those actors, Philip Blue Owl Hoosier of the Choctaw Nation.
Yes. Hello.
That's once again, he's often heard here on KKFI as one of the rotating hosts for the 10th Voice on Saturday. So do you sit on this side of the console or do you sit where you are?
Oh, I sit over here. I if I get near technical stuff, it tends to break down.
Okay, but you can hear Philip on, every other Saturday?
On the first Saturday of the month, on the 10th Voice.
And they will discuss the issues of their community.
Yes.
Doing that. So you hear him often here on KKFI, but he is playing the role of Arnold Beckoff. He recently performed in Dad's at Kansas City Public Theater. Christmas Betty in Martin City.
Oh,
were you
yes.
Betty Davis?
Oh,
Betty.
Alas, no. But Jeannie Beachwood was already there being Betty Davis, and who wants to stop that?
I know.
A man? Isn't that designed for a man to play Betty Davis?
It's not. She's been playing it since she wrote it for herself.
Matter of fact, I was cast in the role of Betty Davis when I was 19, 20 years old by Jeff Church in a show called Me and Jezebel. Didn't get to play the role because it was the old Quality Hill Playhouse, and they went equity at that time, and I, you know, was just out of college.
My memory goes back.
It was many, many years ago. Could have been. Yeah, yeah. 20, 25 years ago now? Yes.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago.
That it was.
It's a fun show to do. But anyway, I'm getting sidetracked.
Yes, we're not talking about you now, Chris.
We're talking about Betty Davis.
Philip appeared in 2121 with the Melting Pot Theater. Annie, get your gun at Mystical Theater Heritage. He is a published poet and playwright. He is, as I said, one of the hosts of the rotating host of the 10th Voice. He will be a speaker once again for, how many years now at the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival?
I believe this to be my 22nd year doing that. Standing out there in the hot, telling people academic things about Shakespeare.
Well, because they enjoy the show more when they know something about what they're going to
That's
do.
My hope. I call it edutainment.
Yeah, 1 year, you have to be able to do that and then have a small role in the show. That would be fun as well. He appears in such things as Eat Their Words, a series of readings. Readings done from books written by celebrities.
Or supposedly written by celebrities. I know a couple of the books that we used that the celebrities had never read their own books. But,
I believe that. I believe that they don't even read their own. Because it sounds like it sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when they're on a talk show and they get asked about something.
Charles Barkley tried to sue over his because of what was in it. He said, I didn't say anything like that. But it's real heavyweights like Mr. T, Miley Cyrus, Celine Dion.
So Philip spends a lot of time in this world. He is now playing the role of Arnold Beckoff in Torch Song Trilogy, written by Harvey Fierstein, and I guess inspired by the life of Harvey Fierstein.
That's right, yeah, or at least the things that he was going through as a gay man in the 1970s and 80s in New York City. A lot of the locations mentioned are based on actual places. The whole first act takes place in and around a bar called the International Stud, which was a real bar in Greenwich Village at that time. So it's very much inspired by his life and what he was experiencing at that time.
I bet Philip knows a lot of interesting things about Harvey Fierstein.
I do. Some of them I can't necessarily discuss on the radio. He... went to what he described as an all-male, all-gay arts school, theater school, and they had two rules. If a man wants to take you home, make him take you shopping first, and don't go home with anyone from Jersey. You'll be late for your first class.
Well, it's too far to come back.
Exactly.
How do you play the character? Is this... You're the same person throughout all the acts.
Mm-hmm. I kind of look at Arnold as sort of a Peter Pan type of character, that he's sort of the boy who never grew up until suddenly in the last part of the play he has to take a lot of responsibility, and he takes it on tooth and nail, even though he feels really inadequate to be a parent adopting a child. And I think that's something I think anybody who has a child can relate to, is I don't know what I'm doing. But he has, I was also involved in a search for love and a search for creating family around him. Sometimes it's genetic, sometimes it's created family. And he's working hard to find love and community and respect. And those are the only things that he really wants.
Do we follow it as a progression in Arnold's life?
Definitely. The first act, we're sitting in 1978, I think, the time, because that's when the play originally appeared. In the film version, at least, it was started in 1971. But you see 78, 79, and then 5 years later. So you track his progression from being a very single male, female impersonator, entertainer in the beginning of the play. And then in the end, you see him really forming a family, looking into adopting a son, and have settling down with a love affair that's been on and off again through all three of the acts.
Potentially.
We don't want to give it away.
But if it's based
no spoiler.
On, if it's based on Harvey's, or inspired. The word you used was inspired. So if it's inspired by some of the things that really happened in Harvey's life, could the people imagine that this is kind of what Harvey Fierstein's life is like?
I think so, but most importantly, I think that it's important to see this as... the coming out process, and not only for Harvey himself, but really what the gay community was going through in the 70s and 80s. You know, Stonewall happened in 1969, mm-hmm. right? And so that really started the gay rights movement. And this is an opportunity to provide a human perspective on the political and social turmoil that was happening at that time. And really, how does one person not just fight for their rights, but just fight for the right to love? How do they create, as Phil said, a community, a family? And that's really what the gay rights movement is about. And so seeing it from such an individual perspective, I think makes it a really richly rewarding experience, no matter if it's fact or fiction.
It decidedly personalizes it into coming out of some of his experiences, but then adding to them with some fictional elements, I believe, as it goes along.
There are definitely things that anybody can relate to, whether that be fighting with your parents or, you know, adopting a son, falling in love. And I think that's what's so great about this story, and really what made Harvey such a success was because there are ways that everybody can relate to this.
Okay.
So it's all happening. I mean, it's all between, say, the years of Stonewall and the hitting of the AIDS crisis. It's that political background that sort of informs the action of the show. That's sort of the backdrop against which all of these social changes are affecting Arnold and the people around him personally. And although, I also have to say, although Arnold is sort of, you know, it's the role Harvey wrote for himself.
Exactly.
So it is kind of the flashier role in the show, but there's Arnold and Ed, the bisexual man that he's fallen in love with, are the three characters that, or the two characters that appear in every part of the show. So it's really about their relationship through the whole thing, falling in love, going separate ways for a while, and then potentially reuniting.
It is a musical, so let's talk about some of the songs.
It's actually play with music, so the songs are not written in the script as it says insert song here, but it doesn't provide you with the music that you do like a normal musical would. So there wasn't a traditional composer. So we have kind of taken a slightly different interpretation. In the original, since it's Torch Song Trilogy, they used songs from the 20s and 30s, which have a very gay camp aesthetic to them. But I really wanted to bring us back to the 1970s and try to lift up the gay culture that was happening at that time. So we actually use a lot of disco music in the pre-show and within the songs. And also, I feel like so many of those great female 70s singers, they were singing Torch-style songs, even though they were written in the 1970s rather than the 20s or 30s.
Well, I was going to ask next about the songs that Philip sings in the show and others.
In fact, Chris had a very set idea of a song that he wanted to put in the show. And I was just playing one day and I started twisting around the lyrics. The wonderful, wonderful Stephen Sondheim song, I'm Still Here from Follies. Except as I was playing with it, I was like, oh, you know, Arnold would probably do it with I'm Still Queer. So I've developed a set of lyrics to go with that, and Chris was like, I love that idea.
That's right, yeah.
So we're building some of our own into it.
Yep.
Well, that's interesting. You get to
We also, Enough is Enough and I Will Survive, which are kind of iconic gay songs from the 70s, and I think bringing them in, and they're sung live by two of our singers who play the Lady Blues characters, I think that really adds an interesting dimension to the whole play.
And we also have a couple of popular songs from the period sung by the original artists, and one very special one is the Carpenters singing We've Only Just Begun. it comes at a very special moment in the play.
We're speaking with Chris McCoy, the director, and Philip Blue Owl Hoosier. He portrays the character of Arnold Beckoff in the Barn Players production of Torch Song Trilogy. It opens this Friday, May the 31st, and runs through June 10th at the Barn's new location in Northeast Kansas City, 1000 East 9th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. If you need a MapQuest, 64106 is the zip code. It's essentially at the intersection of Harrison and 9th Street, up north of the river.
Almost north of the river. Close to the river.
Close.
You can see the river. Just south of the river.
Some quick directions. I guess go north on Troost after I-70. Is that the best way to go?
I believe so. Yeah, go north on Troost up to 9th Street. Or you can get off on 12th Street and then Troost to 9th. And then it's right there. We have there's a secure parking lot. They're very conscious of security there, and they have people all around the Arts Asylum who are, you know, taking care of patrons who come for anything that's there.
Things working out well at this new location?
Oh, yeah. It's such a great facility.
Oh, yeah.
Giant. I mean, we were able to rehearse downstairs, which was a huge rehearsal room. Everybody's been so accommodating. And, you know, that's always something that you're nervous about going into a new space is, well, is it going to be prepared? Are we going to have this, that? But it's really been a delight to create in this space. And I think we've done some fun stuff with the design, the set design, and the way we're using the space itself.
Yeah. Is it larger than it was a few years ago? Somebody told me that it had been expanded.
It is. I think there's more seating, certainly, than the last time that I performed anything there. And it's permanent seating and much more comfortable than folding chairs.
Yes.
Sure. Well, you can go online at thebarnplayers.org. Make arrangements that way. There is a number to call. Do they take reservations now at this number, or would
they rather
did it online? Okay, the number to call then is 913-432-9100. We're speaking, of course, with Chris McCoy, the director, Philip Blue Owl Hoosier, the character who plays Arnold Beckoff. But there are more people in the show, of course.
Oh, yes.
Than Philip. Would you like to talk about some of those folks?
Oh, yeah. Derek Freeman plays Ed, who's the other character who's runs all the way through it. Brent Custer and Jennifer
Lumiere.
Because I don't do names very well. Are absolute delights to work with. But the woman who plays my mother, I don't necessarily want to tell you this, but you'll appreciate her acting so much more. We're the same age.
Oh.
And she's playing my mother, and we come off from our scenes together where we're just yelling at each other and fighting tooth and nail. And we're finally off stage together, and we're just in each other's arms going, oh, I had so much fun doing that scene with you tonight. So,
and her name is Ellie DeShawn.
Yes.
The wonderful Ellie DeShawn. Yes.
She makes everything so easy. And it's just, we trust each other so much on stage. I think that's, you know, an element that you get from people who know each other.
Yeah, their chemistry is amazing. Even last night, as we were working through Tech Week, I was watching the two of them go, this is amazing. Just they have moments that are, you get completely lost in their stories. And I have to say, I mean, this is, I know it's community theater, but it's really excellent, excellent performances. Yeah. Also want to mention Alex Leondis, who plays David.
Yes.
He's wonderful.
Wonderful young man.
Off to Boston Conservatory at the end of the summer.
Just so talented, so, again, at ease on stage and just trusting completely. I look into his unbelievably blue eyes, and
large,
I'm like, I want to adopt him, too. he's dear, and everyone involved.
Phil is so perfect for this role because he has just created a kind of family among the cast, and it's awesome to see the chemistry between these performers is really something that I don't think you get in every performance, you know, and that comes from the heart. That doesn't come from the script. It comes from what the performers have really brought to it.
Yeah.
Would you stop? You're making me well up over here.
Well, I had to say a couple of nice things. I do have notes.
It is kind
of, don't get me started.
It's stuffy in here. There's a lot of dust.
There's a lot of cottonwood blowing in the studio.
That's right. Yeah. Gets in your eyes sometimes. nothing to be examined by that, of course. That's just the way it happens.
Yes.
But you really get into some of your roles. I've seen you get into other parts you've played as well.
My belief is commit fully, make every moment as rich as it needs to be, and have fun. And even when, you know, there are scenes where I am chewing the scenery and crawling around on the floor and wailing like a banshee. And it's still just so much fun bringing all of that to life.
Yeah. You hear about those actors where you have to reel them back. I'd never quite experienced one like Phil. He brings choices. And I love it because it makes my job so much easier. I'm like, okay, I love that. Let's do that. Oh, remember that when we did that? Yeah, let's keep that. Let's not do that. It's really been fun figuring all of that out.
I bet so.
It's much more difficult, as I found in directing, when actors aren't bringing you things.
Exactly.
When they're just bringing you one standard performance, it's like, okay, play more. And right. There was one cast I told, you have permission to be me. You just explore. Mm-hmm. Find. I was thinking up new stuff to do today because it's about finding all of the life that you can for these characters.
And that's what I tell my students, too. I'm like, you don't get cast because you're a blank slate. You get cast because you bring something to the character that I see and that I find very interesting. So, your job as an actor is to bring in the choices.
Do you feel that you direct differently doing this as you would something in the academic community? And you've also worked in professional theater. So is there a difference in the way you approach how you direct?
I think there is. In professional theater, there are a lot more rules and unions and times that you have to watch. You know, so you have to be incredibly disciplined in professional theater. What I like about community theater and academic theater, well, especially academic theater, I have time to play because the students, you know, are there and they know that they have rehearsals for usually 6 to 8 weeks. And so that gives me a lot more leverage to be creative and to try things and to explore things that you don't always have time to do when you go into other shows. So like with this show, we have a very set amount of time and I had to pretty much have things, you know, the set design figured out so I could do the blocking so that could be done so that, you know, it all falls into the schedule.
Sure. The set, the costumes, especially the costumes. What kinds of things does Arnold Beckoff, played by Philip here? let's hear about some of those costumes.
Oh, well, just last night, in fact, we got one of them and began using it. A gown borrowed from Kansas City's own Melinda Ryder. Which is just
amazing.
It is so shiny and liquidy.
It can walk out on stage on its own.
I didn't even need to be there.
You were there? What?
But there's also, I mean, it's the 70s into the 80s. We've got
so
a lot
fun.
Of pastels and
bell bottoms,
paisleys,
polyester.
All brightness. And then the second act, I think, will surprise people because it's the second act is titled Fugue in a Nursery. And it's the nursery is a nickname for a bedroom in this case. And so all of the characters appear to be in bed together. And there's white fabric hanging and white sheets. And we're wearing white. And it's really interesting.
Yeah. What's really fun about the show, each of the three acts is kind of stylistically very different. Mm. So the first one is
it's very presentational.
Right. It's much more monologues and scenes between Ed and Arnold. And then act two is this fugue between these four characters in almost a love square triangle situations. And then act three is completely realistic. So all of the design elements have been approached from those three different styles. I think that just keeps it interesting. You know, you don't see stylistically plays change throughout the course of them. So that's been really fun to explore as well.
As time went on then, things changed time-wise. Like if it was started in the 70s, the late 70s, mm-hmm. things were different in the 80s, and then things
right.
were different in the 90s.
And he wrote these over a number of years. Mm-hmm. So he wrote the first play in 78, the second one premiered in 79, and then it took a couple years. He wrote the third one to round it out to a trilogy when it transferred to Broadway.
Yeah. You looking forward to this, Philip?
Oh, so much. I cannot wait to have an audience there so we know. You know, we've had Chris, who's lovely and wonderful.
And I laugh loud.
But I want to see if other people find the same wonderful things in these characters that we're finding.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's for, you know. Without an audience, we're just people in the rehearsal hall.
Yep. And so many people have said, you know, they've heard about this or they've seen the movie and they have never had the opportunity to see it live on stage. So I feel we have quite a big burden in some way, but it's a great opportunity for Kansas City audiences.
Especially since it's just been revived on Broadway.
That's right. It's heading toward Broadway. They did an off-Broadway revival last fall.
Okay, the Torch Song Trilogy, a presentation of the Barn Players, opens this Thursday, May 31st. We'll run through June the 10th. That's two weekends.
That's right.
And on each weekend now, let's make sure I have this right, there's a Thursday evening, a Friday evening, a Saturday evening, all at 7:30.
Correct.
Then a Sunday afternoon matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. on each Sunday, each of the two Sundays of the two-week run, at the Barn Players, now of Northeast Kansas City. The address is 1000 East 9th Street. It is essentially the intersection of Harrison and 9th Street. And I suggest, anyway, perhaps going north on Troost till you get to...
9th Street.
At 9th Street. And then go west, just
That's
a little
right.
ways. To get
go
there.
West. Village People Song. See, it all comes back to the gag.
There we go.
TheBarnPlayers.org. You must have the in there. And the number to call for further information, 913-432-9100. I guess reservations are probably preferred because you expect big crowds, probably.
We hope so, yeah. That's okay. Always a good idea.
From what I hear, yeah.
Okay. All right. I want to thank you both very much for coming on this Memorial Day Monday, where we honor those who have passed before us. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
And thank you, Michael. We honor you for still being with us.
Oh, well,
and the great service you provide.
I hope I'm around for a while, too.
Yes.
Chris McCoy, the director. He is also an assistant professor of theater at William Jewell College. So those of you who are attending William Jewell and be having his classes, you now have an idea how to approach him when you get there. And Philip Bluell Hoosier, who plays the role of Arnold Beckoff, you know, very experienced. You'll see him at the Shakespeare Festival. You'll see him on stage for the Barn Players, or you can tune in on the correct Saturday afternoon when the 10th Voice is here on KK. What time?
1 p.m.
Well, at 1 p.m. on Saturday afternoons, where he is one of the rotating hosts of the This Way Out program right here on KKFI. Thank you so much, both
Thank
of
you,
you for
Thank
coming
you.
And being with us. We're going to take a brief break. When we return, we're going to journey out to Independence. There's some very competitive ladies out there in Independence, and we're going to learn more about them, the Kitchen Witches. Sounds very interesting, does it? When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host on this Memorial Day Monday, also known as Commemoration Day and Decoration Day in various incarnations that it's had over the years, where we honor our veterans, not only of the military, but people in our lives who have passed before us as well, all to be remembered on this sacred holiday. Well, welcome back to the show. In the second part here, we're going to journey out to Independence. I always say the land where I was raised, because I was raised in Independence. And we're going to talk to the Independence City Theater and the show they have coming up. Very interesting title. The Kitchen Witches. Understand it, very competitive group of ladies. Michael Masterson, the director, is with us, and we have two of the ladies in question, Janet Shellman, who plays the role of Dolly Biddle, and Mary Masterson, who plays the role of Isabel Lomax in the show as well. Kitchen Witches sounds like a very competitive group of ladies there.
Well, these two fine young actresses just bring a lot of stress and comedy at the same time to this endeavor. It's a fun, hilarious, competitive piece.
It's a very catchy name. Of course, I can't tell you how many people have said, "Oh, that sounds interesting."
Yes. The Kitchen Witches.
Yes.
Oh, really? Is that really the title? Yes, it's Kitchen Witches. And we have fun with that at one point. But, it's good. It's just two women who were best friends in high school, who were split apart because of a man.
Oh.
And now it's almost 40 years later, and they've hated each other ever since that split. And they wind up coming back home, and they work at a cable access TV show. and they each have their own cooking shows that management has decided to cancel and put on different venues to replace them. And because they actually physically meet up on the studio floor, management says, I think we have something that could be very interesting for our audience. Let's put them together into a show with the two of them. And, excuse me, and thus we have the Kitchen Witches cooking show.
See, teams were very popular in a certain period of time, mostly the 80s, I think. Notice there were radio teams in the morning. On some stations there still is. But they would match up people. But often they would go for the most conflict they could find between the groups.
Oh, absolutely.
So I guess this is the idea here.
Yes, it is, because they have, they have the conflict that they bring from their history. If you have everything that's hunky-dory, that's kind of bland and boring. And you need to provide a little spice to your life. And these ladies bring that spice in many ways.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very, very much from what it sounds like. So the idea is to put two ladies that really don't like each other. Can we go back, without giving away too much of the plot, and go into the problems with the man? Because that's what the audience is thinking. What was the deal with this man?
Well, in high school, he dated one and then married the other.
Oh, how dare you.
No, he actually dated both of us.
That is true.
Yes.
But the description in the script says he dated one and married the other. But he did actually date the
both
two of them, both independently and at the same time they hung out together. So it was just three people in high school, having a good time and... Then he proposed to one, and then when she turned him down, he proposed to the second one.
Oh,
so,
And I was the better of the two. Anyway, so... You just
Dolly
keep
Bill.
So. Is this the way the other lady, Isabel, sees this?
Yeah.
I was... the chosen one.
Ah.
So I was first pick, actually.
Oh, in your dreams.
I was first pick. You know perfectly well that I was first pick.
Yeah, well, I was there first, and then she just oozed into it. So, you know.
That's not, in my recollection, that's not how that happened.
Yes, well, she's older than I am, so her recollection isn't always...
Since when?
Well... See, this is the way the whole play is, and it's awesome. It's so much fun.
In real life, do they get along?
In real life, they are wonderful friends, and they get along.
Yes.
And they share a love of wine, and they love acting and performing and hanging out, and they have great conversations about a variety of topics. They are very nice friends, and so which brings an inner life to the two characters who were best friends in high school and now get into this conflict situation.
So, does this man we've talked about, does he play a part in this scenario?
No, he's gone.
Oh, no. Divorced?
No.
Deceased?
He does play a part in the scenario, but I don't want to give away that part because he's not physically present.
Okay.
Yeah. The show only has four characters. We have Dolly Biddle. We have her son, Stephen Biddle, who's the producer-director of her cooking show, Baking with Babka.
Ah.
Then we have Isabel Lomax, who comes in because her show has been canceled, and she's wanting to view what her old friend Dolly is doing. And then we have Robin the Camera Gal, who's an intern of the... Cable access show Getting Our Kids Off the Street. And so she's in there to help the show flow and is just a silent, supportive character for the whole endeavor. And so we have Stephen, who's stuck between his mother and Isabel and having to deal with creating this new show called The Kitchen Witches and being the peacemaker between two fighting women, which is, as you can expect, a little stressful.
I can imagine. Yeah. So they both had cooking shows of their own, and they decided to mesh these two together.
Right. Management says this is a good thing to look at viewing. So we have Dolly Biddle, who does her Baking with Babka Hungarian show, and we have Isabel Lomax, who does her cooking show Busy Izzy, because she's a graduate of the Cordon Bleu in France. So two totally different styles that now have to be meshed.
Last week on the show, we did an interview with Kansas City Actors Theater. They're doing the show Skylight, and the actress actually cooked on stage. Now, does this happen with these ladies?
We prepare things, but there's no actual cooking.
Right, but we do prepare.
We do prepare the food.
Yes.
Yeah. So food flies.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Yes, there are real
We prepare
flour,
and we
sugar,
wear
salt,
food.
Yes.
Should we warn the audience not to sit too close?
Oh, no, the audience is fine. Nothing goes out into the audience.
Nothing flies that direction.
Yes. But we
And we have a Kitchen Witches Quickies Cook-Off, which is their version of the Iron Chef Challenge, in which actual food is eaten by our celebrity judges. For each night of the show, and we have six performances, we have six celebrity judges who will come up on stage and join the ladies and Stephen and actually get to sample real food.
Yeah.
And so there's a big moment there. It doesn't last but 5 minutes on stage, but it's a great opportunity for our celebrity judge to participate in.
Yes, and the celebrity judge just have to wear protection because things could get a little messy.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Warning, warning.
We're speaking with the director and two of the ladies in the show The Kitchen Witches, opening Thursday, May 31st at City Theater of Independence. Performances continue then Friday, June 1st. There is a special dinner theater presentation on Saturday, the 2nd of June. That would start like an hour before the regular show.
Yes.
Do they still have time? I mean, often when I've had people from City Theater on, they say their reservations for the dinner are gone long before we get to the interviews.
Oh, no, the last I heard, there are still seats available for dinner. It's catered by a very nice company. Am I allowed to say their name?
It is still Nadler's.
It is still Nadler's, yes. And they have told us that there are seats still available. That's for the Saturday, June 2nd. And there's more than enough time to show up and eat and relax and have a good conversation and then sidle yourself on over to the theater and get comfortably settled in to enjoy a really fun, hilarious show with lots of laughter and lots of energy and two crazy ladies up on stage.
Was Nadler's at all concerned that some of their food would end up on the stage being thrown around?
No. Nadler's is a separate entity. We didn't want to invite them to participate as a donor of food. Their food is to be enjoyed by our audience. The food that we have on stage, it's only to be enjoyed for those two edible items by the celebrity judge. The rest of it, you know, they help us a great deal over the year, and they're a wonderful company. So we'd like to have our audience just enjoy their meal separate.
So I assume now we're far enough into the rehearsal process where you're actually throwing food.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
How fun is this?
Oh, it's so fun.
Broke us up the other night.
Yeah. The first night that we actually did it, we were in stitches laughing so hard because it's the first night we actually got to throw things.
Fling food.
And we were laughing so hard that we had to stop and regroup and then.
Yep. Doubled over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Laughing so hard.
It's so funny.
And our audience that comes to see the show is actually our live studio audience for our cable access show, The Kitchen Witches.
Yeah.
So they get to participate, too.
Yeah.
Now, Janet recently appeared in Blue Springs.
Yes, and actually
I did too.
So did Mary.
And so did Mary.
We were both in Steel Magnolia, yes.
Yeah.
So, and then we got to go right from one to the other.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where else?
We were nice to each other in Steel Magnolia.
Yes.
But we're not so nice to each other.
Where else have you been seen? I've seen you a number of times.
Yeah, in Lee's Summit, Blue Springs, Independence. I've worked with Encore with Mike once before. This is actually, I think, the first performance that I've gotten to do with CTI.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about Mary? Mary, I've seen before. She did the pioneering lady.
Frontiers for the Trails Museum. That was three summers ago.
Two and three summers ago.
Two and three summers ago. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Blue Springs, City Theater of Independence. Yep, that's where I've been.
Yep. Mary's been involved at CTI since 2009 and has done quite a few shows and done our Playwright Festival a number of times as well, which we'll have coming up in August. And Janet seems to work at Blue Springs and Lee Summit more than she does at CTI. I keep trying to get her to come on over there, but, you know, we got to find the best character roles for both of these young ladies.
So hopefully now that the door's been opened at CTI, they'll remember me and get to do more.
You're in.
Michael, right, exactly.
Now, Michael's directed before. Have you performed before as well?
Oh, multiple times, yes, and pat myself on the back. I enjoy performing. I'm looking forward to getting back to it next season, but I do really enjoy directing because, as they say, it's your only opportunity ever to be like God. You're in charge of telling these people what to do and how to do it. And I don't look at it that way. I look at it as a collaborative effort between me and the actors, and we talk about what's going to work best for telling the story and what they can do. With me sitting out in the audience and saying, well, you know, let's make some modifications or let's make some adjustments.
He's so good at it, too. Just the other night, he said, Janet, why don't you da-da-da-da-da? And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's such a good idea. I never thought of it that way. So Mike's really, really good at coming up with ways like that. I'll pat you on the back.
I just like to focus on telling the playwright's story. So what the playwright has brought to us, we want to show it as the best way we can to our audience and provide them the best experience possible. And I think with this show that we've done that. We're giving them a relationship, not only between the two ladies, but with Stephen and with Robin on the side, solid underpinnings. And we tell the story about a friendship that got divided nearly 40 years ago that has a good chance of coming back together again.
Yeah. These things happen in real life more often than we think. Long-term friendships and come to an end for whatever reason. Sometimes they could reunite and come back again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the two ladies bring such strength and solid focus to what they're doing that my job's pretty easy. I just have to tweak a few things once we get the blocking set, and that was kind of nice and fun too. Mm-hmm. That, you know, when do you come through the door? When do you slam the door? When do you have to throw the food? When do you smack that? That's simple. The relationship is the thing that was the more important aspect of the play. And with the two of them being friends and communicating with each other, it was so nice to watch them then start haggling and, you know, fighting with each other, because it's not what they normally do. And it was, I just tweaked a few things.
Does the script get detailed into what exactly the playwright wanted thrown at a particular time?
It does.
Or are you more freelance in that respect?
It's a combination of both. The playwright, the play itself is written that you could do what they say in the play. You could also make up your own recipes and do your own foods and put that together as well. They give you that opportunity. And it's a Canadian play, and they also allow you to identify local cities and landmarks and things. So we've made it attuned to Independence and Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So we have locales that are easily accessible to our audience. They'll recognize the city we're talking about and the location we're talking about.
Oh, there was a cable access channel in Kansas City back as far back as the 80s, at least, mm-hmm. where shows were produced. I was involved with several of them. There were people who got along, people who didn't. They didn't go as far as to let people start throwing things, though.
Well,
they were worried about that.
Would have been more fun.
Yeah. There was a lot of discussion shows where people took opposite issues.
Mm-hmm. No, this opposite issues is right out there. And, you know, there's physical threats of violence, and then there's the food aspect. It gets smacked around and thrown around, and it's just so fun.
Well, we're told all the time there's a connection between food and love. Mm-hmm. Not, these are two ladies, of course, but we're always told that that is the case.
Well, cooking shows are extremely popular, and it's nice to instead of just sitting and watching the celebrity chef make their items, and it's all done in literally 30 seconds to a minute, and now you get to see a little bit of the backstory of how things get to be made, because it's cable access. They don't have the time to edit and put it together after the fact. It's happening live right in front of you. So, fortunately, I have two high-energy young ladies running around and can sustain that energetic enthusiasm throughout this two-hour show.
Do we know, and perhaps we don't, but maybe we do. It was written by Caroline Smith. Did she base it on anything that had happened to her? Or?
She did. She did.
Oh, okay. I've hit upon a good line here.
Yes. Caroline Smith, in the mid-2000s, 2003-04, was an artistic director, producer of a theater company in Canada called Stirling. S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G, Stirling Theater Festival. And she had two ladies of a certain age who were in town to act in a play together. And they invited Caroline over for dinner in an apartment that they were given to live in. And so they were in an unknown kitchen, and she said, it was so fun to watch them interact with each other and tell jokes and insult each other and just try and put this meal together. And she was sitting there and she went, oh my gosh, this is a play. She then wrote the play. And in 2005, it won the Samuel French Canadian Playwriting Competition. And it's literally been produced in the United States and Canada ever since 2005. And so it's an extremely popular play that is brand new to the Kansas City region. So we're very, very blessed to be the inaugural production here locally. I won't say anything else other than that. Caroline Smith is still a producing person in Canada as well as being a playwright. She has written a few other plays as well, but that's something that down the line I'll explore as we go into our season committee with City Theater of Independence next year and see if there's anything that we want to look at for producing in the future. But right now, The Kitchen Witches is our focus.
And that will open this Thursday, May 31st at 7:30 p.m. Performances continue then on Friday the 1st at 7:30 p.m. Saturday the 2nd, the play at 7:30, the dinner theater at around 6:30.
About 6:30.
They should probably make arrangements for that soon if they're interested in that, don't you think?
Yes. The website will have a contact phone number that they can make the call and reservations on.
That's not the same as the reservation line for the show?
It is.
It is. So it's 816-325-7367. Mm-hmm. That's the number to call. Or go online to citytheaterofindependence.org. So performances the first weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all at 7:30 p.m. The next week, only minor changes, Friday the 8th at 7:30, Saturday the 9th at 7:30, an afternoon matinee on Sunday the 10th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Sermon Center, the home of City Theater of Independence and other organizations as well also use that space. It's located at 201 North Dodgen, and if you MapQuest things, you need that zip code 64050, but it's essentially at that very familiar intersection of Truman and Nolan Roads in Independence, Missouri. It's a very fine facility. You're very lucky to have a facility like the Sermon Center.
We are extremely lucky, and we've been there. This is the closing show of our 38th season. So we've been there quite a long time. We are in the process of fundraising for improving the facility. We're looking for donations for acquiring new curtains. We were lucky enough to just get a new floor that replaced a 21-year-old floor. So we're very, very lucky to have the support of the Powerhouse Foundation, as well as the City of Independence Parks and Recreation Department. They do support our endeavors as well as the other two companies that are there, the Children's Performing Theater and the Encore Theater Group. So, yes, we are a very busy space and literally are so pleased to be there. It's nice to have a resident theater in the City of Independence that we can offer entertainment in variety of forms to the residents and to the local community that surrounds us. We are striving to be the premier community theater in Eastern Jackson County, and I think we do a very good job. It's been an excellent season for us. We're ecstatic to be ending it with the Kitchen Witches and this just hilarious comedy. And then next season, we are going to bring four more plays and a musical to our audience and just keep going.
You're very lucky to have that facility. My first guest today, the Barn Players, had to search high and low for the place where they're at.
Yes.
And that's, finding space is a major problem as far as community theaters are concerned around the area. You're one of the lucky ones.
Yes, and trying to convert a space into a theater, that's a lot of work. I admire what the Barn is doing. Mm-hmm. It's a shame they lost their space, but I wish them so much luck with their new location.
Okay, the show, Kitchen Witches, opens this Thursday, May 31st, runs for 2 weekends. The first weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The second weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The Sunday afternoon is a matinee. It's at 201 North Dodge in the Sermon Center. That's the intersection of Noland Road and Truman Road in Independence. The number to call for more information, 816-325-7367, or online at citytheaterofindependence.org. I want to thank all of you for coming on this very busy Memorial Day, taking part out of your holiday.
Thank you.
To be with us. Janet Shellman, who plays the role of Dolly Biddle, Mary Masterson, who plays the role of Isabel Lomax, and the director, Michael Masterson. Thank you so much for being with us on this Memorial Day edition of the Arts Magazine Show.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to come here.
Oh, nice to have you. Thanks for that. Sam Wiseman is next. He'll be playing some of the finest jazz you'll hear. KKFI, of course, is known for its jazz and the blues. So this is what we do. We have jazz from 1 to 3. We have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.